They may take our TikTok, but they will never take our freedom. Welcome to Primary Technology, the show about the tech news that matters. Today, Apple announced its next event. It's probably going to be about iPads. It's Let Loose event. We're going to talk about that. The Congress and President Biden signed a bill that could ban TikTok here in the U.S. Plus, there's a bunch of earning reports. Netflix is not going to report subscribers anymore. And yes, you probably see it if you're watching on YouTube. I'm wearing the Humane AI pin. So yes, we must talk about that as well. This episode is brought to you by you, those who support us directly. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Robles, and joining me, no pin, maybe he'll get one, who knows? No, he's not going to get one. My friend Jason Aiton. How's it going, Jason?
It's good. I don't have a pin, but I have learned a lot about websites this week, so I'm feeling good about myself.
Jason, you just like fish for trolls every week. You're just fishing for trolls over on Threads. You're just throwing it out there. Hold on, let me ask them.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, what I realized is that on Threads, the well-intentioned nature of people doesn't always mix with my sarcastic habit. And I think because I just have pretty much, I haven't ignored Threads. I just haven't built that up as an audience because no one who's responded to this particular post about the box that tells you to keep me logged in on websites, which does not mean that, by the way. But no one who's responded to that is actually someone who follows me. So the algorithm is just saying, there's a whole bunch of people who want to talk to you about browsers and cookies. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you so much.
For what it's worth, I thought that was a funny thread. You know, it was one of those things you just throw out there that log me in, you know, keep me logged in, checkbox, never works. And they just need, there needs to be a sarcasm meter on every post, just so people can see, because not everybody understands sarcasm.
Well, also, I think you should just assume that if someone posts a question like that, you know, that says, what does this checkbox mean? Because it clearly doesn't mean keep me logged in. You should just assume that the person is not begging you to explain, you know, cookies and browser settings and how the internet works, especially if that person is a tech columnist who's written about browsers and cookies and that kind of thing for a living for a while. So, but these people don't know.
Pedigree does not play into social media. I could tell you that.
Right.
I'll tell you that.
So
we have some housekeeping we want to do. A couple of 5-star review shout outs. Thank you to those who leave us 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Eeyore Hoop left us 5-star review. Thank you for that. And Logan Pritchett 01. Battery percentage on. That's okay. I won't hold it against you, but thank you.
There's been quite a few of those lately. I just want to be clear.
There's been quite a few. I need a battery percentage on this Humane AI pin. I could tell you that because this thing dies fast.
Will it make it through the end of the show? That's going to be the challenge.
Let's do a battery check. Hold on. What's your battery at?
88%. Booster 83%.
So it's weird because it tells you the battery percentage of the pin and then the booster. So you always have to remember it's in that order. So we'll see. But we'll do a check-in at the end of the show.
But those two things are not equivalent, right? It's not like you have 80, whatever the average of those two things is total, because the onboard battery is much smaller than the booster, right?
Correct. Okay. To be clear, this is the Humane AI pin. I still have no idea how the battery works because last night I charged the boosters because I did my unboxing. I was using it. We're going to talk about this in the personal tech area. We're not doing a whole segment on the Humane AI pin. But last night I was using it and I asked it what the battery was. It said 10% battery, 90% booster. I was like, okay, well, then I should be good. Like, I would think the booster just charges the pin and we're good to go. And then 10 minutes later, I go to ask it something and just nothing happens because it died. And I didn't realize, I guess, like the booster and the pin, I don't know how it works. I honestly have no idea. And then if it fully dies, you have to put it on the charger for like 20 minutes before it like wakes up again. And even after it has some charge, you have to wait like it to, anyway.
It's kind of like a Roomba. If it gets stuck underneath your table, you got to take it back to its base, let him take a nap, and then
you got to let it, it's confused about where it is.
It'll go back and do its thing, yeah.
It doesn't understand. So anyway, all right, we've got to talk about the Apple event, but I do want to do two quick housekeeping things. Number one, I sprung an entire community on Jason on Monday and on everyone because I was excited to do it, and so I did it. But I've been wanting to find a place, well, I've talked about it the last couple episodes, where all of you, those who listen, those who watch, where we can engage with each other and talk and comment and it not be on an algorithmic platform because people will email us sometimes, we get threads, we get X replies, and it's hard to, like, these people, it'd be great if everybody knew each other and could, like, actually interact in one platform. So that's what we did. It's actually called a Circle community. It's completely free. You don't have to pay to be a part of the community. You can go to social.primarytech.fm, and I'll put that URL, obviously, in the show notes. You could just click it there. But honestly, I immediately loved this because it's a singular place where the entire audience, Jason and I are in there, where we can interact, and there's these things called spaces on the left. I'm new to Circle. I've never created a Circle community before, but I've seen other creators use it, and it seemed like the perfect tool. And frankly, I think it's working well. So there's an episode discussion space where only me and Jason can post. And what we'll do is we'll post the new episode every week here, just kind of like a regular post, and then everyone can comment on it. So we can all engage. If you have thoughts about something specific in the episode, you can comment on that post. Then there's a space called Conversations where anybody can post. You can post a conversation. I kind of did some behind the scenes pictures and stuff. I posted the Apple event. And then look, 26 comments. That's more comments than I get on Threads and X together on a post, which is amazing. And it's all people who listen to the show, which is amazing. So Conversations, anyone can post. You can post, listeners, viewers, everybody. There's a Say Hello tab where people can introduce themselves. That's just been amazing to see the audience engaging. Someone from Panama is in there, listens to the show, and was engaging. And so I know there's lots of international listeners. Would love to have you in there too. So it's completely free to join. We'd hopefully have it in there. Right now, we already have 45 members, and all I did was post like once or twice about it. And so we're hoping after this episode, we fill it up. This is a paid service, just to be clear. And so the version, the tier that I'm on now maxes out at 100 members. If we hit that like tomorrow after this episode post, because so many of you just want to be a part of it, I will upgrade us. And then we just need a bunch of you to start supporting the show too. So, but I will upgrade it because then there could be unlimited members. And I would love for many people to be in here. And I'm going to talk about numbers in a second for this show, for the other housekeeping thing. But anyway, I would love to have everyone part of the community. I think it's really fun. And there's an iPhone app you can download, so you can just do it on your phone. And I don't know. You're in there too, Jason. You joined.
Felt like I wasn't going to let Steven have this all to himself because I felt like bad right. things would happen. So I was like, yeah, I feel like it's got my name on it. I should probably be in there.
Yes. So it's a lot of fun. So anyway, that's the community. This is going to be ongoing. And to the second point of housekeeping, you know, we had someone reach out talking about subscription fatigue, basically. And they were like, you know, $5 a month supporting the show compared to other shows. Like if you pay Wondery $5 a month, you get, you know, ad-free versions of a bunch of shows and things like that. And so number one, those of you who support us, we are so thankful. And we actually, you know, want to plan future benefits. The Circle community is part of that. It offers ways to like paywall certain benefits. And those of you who already support the show will be able to access that. So that's a long term. I think of our show as like version 1.5 right now. And, you know, this Circle community, like we're not at version 2 yet. And so I'm excited for what the future holds. But also, if you look at a lot of other tech shows out there, many of them are part of networks or publications. So either it's a website that's been longstanding that has a podcast, or you have like the Vox Media Network. You have, you know, the Vergecast network of shows, things like that. And we're one of the few like totally independent. Like we're not part of anything anywhere. Like it's just us. It's just us here. And so it's amazing that many of you have come to listen and watch. And so when you think about like Starbucks versus a bespoke cafe, sometimes you might pay a little more for a cafe, and because it's bespoke and it's singular kind of thing. And so that's how I think about it. And again, if we lowered the price for the monthly thing, but then add benefits in the future, it's awkward to like raise the price. So if you can't do $5 a month, or obviously you have subscription fatigue, I totally get it. Like I have the same. I just added Hulu to Disney Plus so I could watch Shogun, and I hated doing it, but I did it. But I totally get it. You can still support the show just by watching, just by listening. And the other point I'll make is right now, you know, not a lot of podcasts are transparent about numbers, but we'll be transparent with you right now. We get about 2,000 downloads per episode here on Primary Technology, which is amazing. That's like top 5% of podcasts. Most podcasts do not get that many. Plus, we have several hundred views on YouTube. YouTube is algorithmic, so it changes all the time. But there's like 2,000 of you out there, which is incredible. Thank you. That's amazing. Sponsors for podcasts typically don't start looking at a show until it gets to 10,000 downloads per episode. And so when it comes to like revenue generated by ads, like we're not there yet. It might take a while. And so that's one of the reasons why we really appreciate those who support the show directly. But again, just listening, downloading, watching is huge. Once our YouTube channel gets to 1,000 subscribers, then the channel can be monetized and we could make AdSense revenue from there. It'll probably be like $10 a month, but just starting out, you know, version 1.5. And so thank you to those who do it. And a great way, if you can't do the subscription or, you know, just not there for you, then share the show, you know, get the word out. Word of mouth is still one of the number one ways that podcasts reach a wider audience. And so that could help us. That helps a lot too.
Well, I was just going to say, like, to reiterate, we super appreciate everyone who supports the show. We really do. Both in terms of monetarily, but also if you're telling your friends about the show, if you're sharing it on social media, if you want to contribute to the community, like that, those things are really helpful. I can certainly understand, as someone who like is constantly thinking, do I need this service anymore? Right? Like, we are one of the few people that canceled Netflix like a year and a half ago, because we're just like, when's the last time we opened that app? It was like to watch Ozarks, or like it was like a while ago. Okay.
Yeah.
I can completely understand that. I do think and so if you don't feel like the value is there, like there's no hard feelings. Please just keep listening to the free show. We're so thankful for that. The only argument I would make that would make it different is like, if you could pay $5 a month for Wondery, that's great. But as Steven mentioned, like there's just a totally different kind of scale there. Like, you know, if they have a million or 100 million, I don't even know how many Wondery has. That's just a totally different kind of an operation. And, you know, will this show get there? Like, that'd be wonderful. I enjoy doing this, and it'd be really great to have that many people listening. But it's hard to compare the two. I know that when you are just making a payment out of your checking account or on your credit card, like it's all just dollars. I totally get that. Right. But it would just be really hard to think like, well, what is the value of our time to do that? And I just, like I said, there's no hard feelings if someone doesn't think that it's worth $5 a month. That's great. Like, just keep listening, please. And we'll hopefully convince you over time just by continuing to build that audience and have you feel like, gosh, I like what these guys are doing. I want them to keep doing it. And I just want to support that. So
absolutely. And our goal, my goal is like, I just want to make one of the best tech podcasts out there. I just want it to be one of the best that you enjoy listening to, that you get value from, that you can understand the news, and you can also be entertained and have fun. And I think we have that on the show. So
yeah,
let's get into it, Jason.
All right.
Let's talk about the news, because Apple, finally, this is their first official event, right, of the year, because Apple Vision Pro was like a press release. It was like, it's going on sale, and that was it. So this is the first official Apple event of the year. They announced it. It is Let Loose is the tagline, and it's happening on Tuesday, May 7th at 7 a.m. Pacific, which is 10 a.m. Eastern, earlier than most of their Apple events. Usually Apple events are at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. So early event, the event invite image has an Apple Pencil in the invite. I don't know the last time something was so plainly obvious, like Apple Pencil. Obviously, this is an iPad event. Going to talk about what we can expect, what we're hoping for. And even Sir Tim Cook, he's not really a sir. I don't know if it's legal to call him Sir Tim Cook. Don't come after me, whatever, royal family. Pencil us in. Look at that pun. Pencil us in. For May 7th. There you go.
Steven, I know that you think that this is trolling, but I actually, looking at this, think that my prediction might be more supported by this, which is that what if Apple is just holding an event to introduce an Apple Pencil that you can use with your Vision Pro to draw on freeform boards? Now, listen, I know you think that's ridiculous, and so do I, except wouldn't it be awesome if you could do that? Because the one thing that the Vision Pro could use is an interactive device that you could, like, you know, without just having to pinch and swipe and do things like on a freeform board, having an Apple Pencil support would be pretty amazing. So
yeah, no, this is not going to be just a pencil event. Okay. Although that would be the biggest troll, a 5-minute Apple video.
Yeah. Well, and I know that the 7 a.m. Pacific time thing seems weird, but if you remember the M3 event, which was mostly MacBook Pros and then also the iMacs, was like a 7 p.m. That's event. True. And so
true.
For these video only, meaning they're just streaming this, there's no, to my knowledge, there's no in-person element of this at all. One of the funny things is when you receive one of these as a member of the media, you can read it closely to try to decide, like, are you watching an in-person event, or is this only going to be online? And then the first thing you do is you go and you look at other people who have shared it, and you're like, oh no, their wording is the same. So I'm not actually missing out.
Because there's been a couple events in the past where the wording was like, join us in person at Apple Park.
Right.
But then some people get that invite, and then other people are like, join us live to watch on our website.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, that's not the same thing.
Yes.
Apparently, if you refresh this page on the Apple event page, I don't know if it was on this or a different page, it would like show different graphics or imagery. I guess it's not happening here. Mm. Maybe it's the homepage. Let me try it. If you go to youtube.com/@primarytechshow, it's the homepage, which has the Apple event at the very top. Right now, it's like a green sketch type Apple logo. You can refresh the page, and then it's like the swirly blue. You refresh again, it looks like the iPad Air. See, this is, I don't want to read too many tea leaves, but this looks a lot like the April 20th event from like 3-4 years ago where they announced the iPad Air? I think it's 3 years ago. So I'm just saying,
I mean,
iPad Air, iPad Pro. Okay, here's what we can expect. Here it is. We're going to get an iPad Pro, new iPad Pro. It's going to have an M3. It's going to have an OLED screen. I am hoping beyond hope they move the camera to the landscape side. We'll see. New generation Apple Pencil. It's in the invite. And the new Magic Keyboard. And I'd be happy with that. I think that...
Yeah. Okay, two questions. One, why does anybody care about OLED in an iPad? Just for real question. And then the second one is, why do we need a new Magic Keyboard?
Function row of keys on the Magic Keyboard.
Okay, that's better. That's a fair
angular,
point.
Angular, the increase of the angular, angularity.
You need increased angularization.
increase the angularization. Increase the angularization. Function row of keys. And, you know, maybe some colors? I don't know.
Okay.
Probably
not. I was just curious, because, I mean, the Magic Keyboard is pretty good, but I was thinking, you know, a slightly larger trackpad would be nice, but the Function Row, and I really had not thought about the angularizations, but I agree that that would be a thing. Okay, but the OLED. Yeah. So, like, the 12.9 has a mini LED display.
It's a beautiful screen. I'm hoping that this year the iPad Pros come into feature parity, so the 11-inch and the 12.9-inch have the same display, because up until this point, it's always been mini LED on the larger one and then not on the 11-inch.
Sure.
So I'm hoping maybe OLED creates feature parity among the displays. Honestly, because I want to go with an 11-inch. That's really my goal. I think I want to go 11 because I've been using this guy for the past 6 months. Here's my iPad mini. I edit this podcast on this tiny little screen with this Apple Pencil, and I think I want to go 11-inch. The nice in-between size. So I think we're going to see iPad Air as well. Someone on social media, hopefully, you know, if you're going to comment on these episodes, just do it in our Circle community. This way we can find it all. But they said iPad Air might go M2 rather than M3 to differentiate more from the iPad Pro, which the M2 is plenty powerful. I could see that. I feel like that makes sense. Maybe iPad Air also moves the camera, but keeps the same screen and then no promotion. Maybe that. And do you think, listen, everyone's wanting it. Do you think we're going to get a new iPad mini, refreshed iPad mini?
No. I mean, I would like one, but I don't think that.
I would like one too.
I don't think they sell enough of them, because the small iPad is not the cheapest iPad. If you are just looking for an iPad for your kid, you're buying the 9th gen, right? Or maybe the 10th gen, but you're probably buying the 9th gen, to be perfectly honest. We bought a new iPad to replace the 2nd gen iPad Air, and we just bought a 9th gen iPad because it's like, it's 150 times faster, and it's, you know, $339 or $49, and it's perfectly capable, and all my kid uses it for us to play Minecraft, and it's like, you're going to burn this thing up in 18 months. I'm not spending any more money on it. But the mini, like, I have an iPad mini. I think it's great. I should not have gotten a white case for it, because that's gross. But I think the iPad mini is fantastic. I don't need an iPad mini and an 11-inch iPad Pro, and I'm always going to use the 11-inch iPad Pro. Like, that's my favorite iPad ever. So
yeah, I would be hard pressed if they did update the mini to get both an 11-inch Pro and a mini. I wouldn't rock like that. Yeah. I think one iPad is good for me, and if it was the 11-inch, I would do that. So I do hope that the base model, because up until this point, the cheapest iPad has been the 9th gen, which is still a home button style iPad at $329. And then they have the, I think it's $400 model that is, you know, the actual USB-C cameras on the landscape side of the iPad. The only iPad with that camera uses the weird USB-C pencil. But, you know, I'm hoping maybe that comes down to be like the base model. Like, maybe that comes down into like the $349 price range. So then the cheapest iPad is the new style, no home button iPad, and the home button iPads fade away into the distance. Although they'll live around forever on Amazon and on like third party
market. Yeah, I mean, if they're still selling the M1 MacBook Air at Walmart, they're going to keep selling the 9th gen iPad Pro until like eternity, like forever.
Forever. Dollar Tree. One day, Dollar Tree.
I don't know. I mean, but here's the thing. Like, it is still, the home button doesn't bother me. It's still such a great, honestly, design. And for younger kids who just need a space to grip onto, right? It's actually great to have the chin and the forehead on it. So, I think that they'll be around for a while. So
you're probably right.
The reason I asked is because you talked about OLED, you talked about Magic. The only thing I care about is the camera. Put the camera in the right spot and I'll buy one. Like, I don't even, you could even put the M2 in it again. I don't care. Like, just if they introduce an iPad Pro with the exact same display, exact same processor, everything and they raise the price by $50 to do the engineering for the magnetic, I'll still buy it because I just want that camera in the right spot.
See, I feel the same way with the 11-inch having the good screen. I want the 11-inch to have the good screen.
Yeah, I want it to, but I don't care if you give me the camera because I've got this Pixel tablet.
Oh, he's got a Pixel tablet. He's reaching over, getting
the
tablet.
It gets stuck to the base.
Oh.
I mean, it's a magnetic base, but even it has the camera in the right place. Everyone knows the camera goes. It goes right there. Just Apple, if you're watching, this is where the camera goes. It's this perfect spot. So.
And I wonder, the new Pencil.
I'm not even going to try to put this back on the base. I'm just going to throw it over here. Okay.
Because the current Apple Pencil is like really good. I'm curious how they will improve it. Maybe it'll have some touch sensitive thing on the back so you can like flip it over and erase. You know, because right now you can double tap the side, but it uses like the accelerometer to register those taps, and it's a little wonky sometimes. So I don't really do that.
It always works for me. People talk about like, we need a physical button. And I'm like, really? I use an Apple Pencil every day, and I've never once been like, I need a more reliable way to tap on this thing.
I don't want a physical button. I would do a capacitive button. But again, you'd probably mistouch that all the time. Yeah. So you don't want to do that. Anyway,
I don't know.
I'm excited for an Apple event, excited for iPads, May 7th. Let us know in the community if, you know, before Jason, in a previous life, I would always do a recap podcast after the event.
Mm.
Now we've never done this before. This is the first time we have an Apple event after doing this show. I mean, do you write stuff right after an event? Do you like do like recaps for Inc?
So it depends on the, if I'm at an in-person event, I will usually write something to publish that afternoon. If I'm not, I will often, depending on what it is, like new iPads, I don't know if I would write something like that afternoon. Right. I usually would think about it and publish something the following morning.
Okay. Cause I'm wondering, I mean, that early in the day, we could do like emergency podcast recording.
That's true.
Maybe try a live stream for the first time. Let us know. Let us know what you would like to see in the comments of this episode in our community. I want to get to the TikTok ban, but I want to cover a couple of other Apple things because so many news articles this past week were like, Apple Vision Pro, Apple's cutting the shipments on Apple Vision Pro because it's not selling. And then there was like backlash to the backlash. All those articles, by the way, are based off this one Ming-Chi Kuo Medium post.
Right.
I didn't realize he was posting on Medium now. I thought it was like secret newsletters before that you had to like, I don't know, pay some guy and say a password in a door. Anyway, he's just posting on Medium now, so it's public. We'll put this link in the show notes, but this is Ming-Chi Kuo, and he was saying, number one, Apple has cut its 2024 Vision Pro shipments to 400 to 450,000 units versus the market consensus of 700 to 800 units or more. So every article that you saw about Apple cutting Apple Vision Pro shipments were based on this one bullet point from a Medium post from Ming-Chi Kuo. I just want to like lay that out there.
Yep.
Just plainly lay that out there. It's not like he says sources or whatever. This is just Ming-Chi Kuo riffing on Medium. And then I thought it was interesting. There was kind of a response post from David Heaney. I'm not familiar with him, but he basically put together some other links, basically saying as recently as February, Ming-Chi Kuo said Apple's target for the year was 150 to 200,000 unit sales for Apple Vision Pro. And he said in January that Apple sold almost 200,000 pre-orders already. So there seems to be some inconsistency maybe with the Ming-Chi Kuo's thought processes here. So I would just encourage everyone, when you see these headlines flood the internet, understand they're based off a single bullet point of a Medium post. And even then, might be, I don't know, suspect? How do you feel about this?
Well, okay, it is... I agree that the backlash to the backlash to the backlash was probably just blown out of proportion, but that is by definition what backlash to the backlash. It's kind of just, you have to blow it out of proportion or else what's the point of it? What's the point of the backlash, right? It's just
the order of operations. It's like PEMDAS.
If there's no lash, it's just a back. I don't know. Anyway, but I do think that if you read this carefully, I don't think that there's a inconsistency because in the Medium post, what he's saying is that according to his survey, right? Meaning the people he's talked to, which are in the supply chain,
right?
That Apple's cut it to 400 to 450 versus the market consensus of 700 to 800 units. So what he's saying is that like the suppliers were expecting it to be a certain number and that Apple maybe is only expecting a smaller number. And if you look back at the previous posts where he's predicting that, like, I don't think that Ming-Chi Kuo is necessarily positing like his own philosophy here. He's just talking about what he's hearing from people. And if he's hearing from 30 different people and he publishes three different takes, that to me isn't surprising, right? Because this is all like a game of telephone, and it's like multiple games of telephone, and we're just hearing what's at the end of that. And so I don't necessarily, I don't think this gives us any information about whether or not the Apple Vision Pro is performing the way Apple thinks it should or not. Like, I just don't think that that's the case. I don't know that you can draw those conclusions. I think that what's fair is Apple never expected to sell a million of these things the first year, and that possibly it expects to ship fewer of them than it originally planned. I think that's the only thing that we maybe can take away from this. So,
yeah. And I was at an Apple store this past weekend. I was at the Mall of Millennia in Orlando, Florida, and they have a big Apple store, like real big. That puts our brand in Apple store to shame. This thing is like 4 to 8 times as large. And so I took some pictures of the store, as you do. And so I'm trying to pull it up here. I'll put the link to this Threads post in the show notes, all the links in the show notes, of course. This was the Apple Vision try-on area at the Mall of Millennia. Not huge, but, you know, there's people trying it, and there's people wearing them and stuff. In my Apple Tower Theater vlog, I also showed their try-on area, which much less people, although that was much like fewer. On a Thursday or whatever.
Sorry, the writer in me insists
Okay. much fewer. But anyway, I mean, we'll see. I think it's interesting. We'll get to later when companies report on their numbers and sales. You know, Apple's never going to say how many Vision Pros they've sold, I don't think, in a future earnings call, but we'll see.
Yeah, the only reason they would do that is if they sold twice as many as they thought, and you would know if that was the case because you just wouldn't be able to get them anywhere.
That's a good point.
And the fact that they finally sent me a review unit says they had a couple extra laying around.
We got some laying around.
I mean, I'm really thankful. I'm not throwing any, like, I'm not complaining.
No.
It just seems obvious to me that there was there was a few laying around.
I love the picture of, like, Tim Cook in that beautiful office that we saw in the Variety article, or Vanity Fair article. And there's just like a stack of boxes in the corner, and it's all Vision Pros. He's like, "Hey, can we get these out of here? Can we send these to somebody?
Can you send one of these to Jason?
Yeah, send one of these to that guy over at, I think, the other guy. Mm-hmm. Send one to the other guy."
That's exactly how this conversation happened, at least in my head.
That's exactly what happened. All right, last Apple thing before we get to the TikTok ban. Apple released another one of these like white papers where it's doing research about large language models. This latest one I thought was interesting. I'd be honest, I did not read this. There's a lot of technical jargon in here, a lot of numbers and math. But the base model was that this is a large language model that can run locally on device. And I think that's a key point when we look towards WWDC. What is Apple going to announce with iOS 18 and the digital assistant? And running on device, I think, is a big deal because Apple's always about privacy and security. They've moved more onto device in years, things like the speech to text. You know, that used to be a cloud-based thing. And then I think it was in iOS 16 or 17, they moved that on device. So it transcribes there. So that's all I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I didn't read it either. I have no idea what any of it means, except hopefully Siri will get better. Like, that's really the only thing we need to know. Just tell me when Siri will get better.
And I will say, well, I'll save it until a personal tech segment,
right?
Because I did a little side by side with this, the pin and Siri. And I guess resolved not to ask Siri things because I thought it was bad. Like, it was just kind of a preconceived notion. I was surprised at how much Siri can do now. Mm. I'll just say that. I was surprised how much Siri can do. We'll do some live demos on air because, I don't know, maybe that'll go well. Maybe not.
I learned the other day that Siri will open apps for you. I learned
it'll open apps.
Right. Although my HomePods get really confused when you ask them to open apps. They don't know what you're talking
about. Well, and here, I think there is a stark difference of using the assistant directly on your iPhone or even your Apple Watch versus a HomePod, because I have really bad luck with the HomePods, like just simple commands. But when you do it on device, because I've been testing it a lot the last day because I've been comparing it to the pin, very different.
Yeah.
Very different. I'll just say that.
Yeah. Asking Siri on your HomePod to do things is like asking your dog to tie its shoes. It's like, I don't have those parts. Like, that's not a thing.
I don't have those parts.
What are you asking me?
I don't have an opposable thumb. The HomePod is like, what? No thumbs. No hands. Right. I got no hands.
I have no apps. Why are you asking me to do things?
I got no apps. There's no apps here.
I'll play you music. What song? Can I just pick a song, please? This is what I can do.
Exactly. That's hilarious. All right. We're going to get to the TikTok ban real quick because, like we said at the beginning of the show is largely pretty much all supported by you, our members. Want to thank our members, and for those of you who don't support the show directly, you can rewind and listen to our reasoning about supporting the show, but this will be quick. I'll just say you can support us directly in Apple Podcasts, and that's great. That's amazing. I will say, as we look towards the future and supporting the show, meaning more benefits, if you support via Memberful, which you can do at primarytech.fm and then click the bonus episodes, or you can just click the link in the podcast show notes, the Memberful integrates directly with Circle. And so there could be a future integration there where when you already support the show via Memberful, whatever benefits we come up with to do in the Circle app, whatever, the social platform, that you'll get those benefits automatically. And then for the Apple Podcast supporters, we're going to have to do some rigmarole like I did last time, which is like, say the secret passphrase that only those who can listen to the bonus episode can hear. And it worked last time, but I don't know. Well, you know, anyway, so you can support the show directly at Memberful, Apple Podcast, $5 a month, $50 a year. And if you can't support the show, we appreciate you listening and watching. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We're trying to get to 1,000 pretty soon over there. And share the show with your friends, your family. Even if they don't enjoy tech, just force them to listen to it. Put it on as we head into the holiday. You know, I said head into the holidays, like Thanksgiving's next week. I don't know what I'm thinking. July 4th, I guess. Put it on July 4th.
Give somebody a gift of membership for Labor Day. Memorial Day.
Memorial Day, which that seems weird. So maybe not Memorial Day. Maybe do, I don't even know. This spot has gone off the rails. So anyway, we're going to get to the TikTok ban. Thank you for those who support the show and for those who will support the show very soon.
Just think, if you were a member, you wouldn't have had to listen to any of that.
That's exactly right. There you go. That's reason enough. Jason, it happened.
Yeah.
It happened. The Senate passed the bill that has decided TikTok either needs, or ByteDance, the owner of TikTok, either needs to divest TikTok, sell it to somebody in the next 9 months or 270 days, I think is exactly the time frame, or TikTok will be banned in the United States. Not only did the Senate pass it, I believe it was 70-something senators, somehow bipartisan agreement on this as opposed to any other legislation that ever gets talked about in Congress. They passed it, and then President Biden signed the bill, and now it goes into the courts. And so where we stand right now, obviously, if you're using TikTok, you understand it's not banned today. Like, you can still use TikTok. But this now enters the courts where TikTok can choose to try and fight this legislation. I feel like it's going to be hard pressed to do that, considering it's fighting it in U.S. courts. the U.S. Congress is the one that passed this legislation. But also, I mean, it can also choose to, a company can buy it, and it would probably be pretty expensive. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Microsoft was considering buying TikTok years ago or months ago. You know, well, that could happen.
Yeah, the Trump administration was trying to get Microsoft right. to buy TikTok, and then we ended up with this weird Project Texas thing where Oracle hosts the data, and there's like a children's museum of content moderation somewhere in Texas where...
That sounds terrifying.
It's, I don't know. I mean, they allowed some people to, some journalists to... tour it. I was not one of them. I'm fine with that, just to be clear. And everyone came away like, this is like a kids museum for content. It's like, push this button and see what happens to the post.
Oh,
it's like,
I see.
What?
When you said children's museum of content, I wasn't sure what was happening. And now, but now
content
I understand.
Content moderation, but which is still so not a like, concept that means anything to any child, but whatever.
It's very strange.
Yeah. So,
so
a couple quick things to say about it is you talked about the margin that it passed by. It's important to understand that none of those people were voting on a TikTok ban. They were voting on aid to Ukraine and Israel. Okay. There was a bill to send aid to Ukraine and Israel. And as a sort of concession to the people who are very adamant that TikTok is a threat, they added that in. So the House actually passed like three, maybe four different bills, and then they sent them to the Senate as one. Because when they sent the TikTok bill the last time, the Senate's like, well, we're just not going to do that. We're just pretend you didn't do that. We don't want to deal with this. Especially we don't want to deal with it before the election, because here's the thing. They know that they need the audience of people who use TikTok to vote for them. So what the House did is they put it all together and they sent it over to the Senate. And they're like, we dare you not to send money to Ukraine and to Israel and humanitarian aid to Gaza. Like, we just dare you. Like, we have every single person that's in there wants one of those things, right? For the people who are on the fence, they're like, oh, and by the way, we could ban TikTok. So like, that's how this thing got passed. And I don't think TikTok's going to get banned. I'm just going to predict that now. I don't actually think it's going to get sold either. Just to be clear, I think that everyone wanted to be on record banning TikTok, but no one actually cares if it gets banned. Like, this is the way like lawmakers think. They want to be able to campaign on the idea that they either did a thing or didn't do a thing, but whether the thing actually happens is insignificant because that'll be somebody else's right. problem. So I would be very surprised. On the other hand, there was a response from TikTok CEO, obviously as a TikTok video, saying like, make no mistake, this is a ban and right. this is affecting your rights. And this is an oppression of your right to free speech. Although in theory, it's not, because it's really like TikTok users are not going to be banned. And all of them can use other platforms right. like Reels, right? Like, so there's, right. it is, yeah, there you go. There's the video. And I think it's so hard, because it's hard to accuse TikTok in this case of being disingenuous, because I just accused everyone in Congress of being disingenuous, right? Sure, so it's sure. really, they're all playing the same game. But I just, you know, it's interesting because he's clearly trying to influence the influencers on TikTok to, you know, make public opinion. But it's, the thing is, it's a law now. Like, if in order for it to be not a law, like, you can make yeah. as many TikTok users mad as you want. And that has nothing to do with whether a judge will decide whether this law is constitutional. It just, it has no bearing on that. So it's, the whole thing is kind of a mess. I don't think TikTok's yeah. going to get banned. I just don't think that that's going to happen. That's separate from whether or not I think it should, just to be clear.
Do you think it's just going to be like TikTok's going to fight this in the courts? Eventually some court will rule that this legislation isn't like whatever, and then it just fizzles out?
Well, remember when the Trump administration was going to force them to sell it to Microsoft, and what happened? Like, literally nothing. Like,
but I thought, no, like, there wasn't any legislation that actually passed and then Trump signed.
Right.
Like, Biden signed the bill yesterday.
Well, the Trump administration, I believe, had an executive order. I don't remember the exact mechanics of it, but like, sure. So yes, it is a law. You're 100% right. And it says that they have right. 90 days nine months from yesterday right. to sell it. And then whoever's the president at that time can decide to extend it for 3 more months. I would not be surprised if at that point, if something is passed, it's like, well, we could extend it for longer, or, well, we could just, whatever. I just don't think any of these people actually care enough about the issue. And I do think that there are issues. I just think that right. they want to be on record as saying, see, I fought back against bad TikTok stuff.
We've said so many times on this podcast, and it seems more necessary now than ever. Like, again, I'm not a lawyer nor a government expert. Overall, like, I guess I have from a creator perspective, it's amazing how a creator, someone can literally build an entire business and their livelihood on a platform that could also go away so quickly. And like, I know we're saying like it might not go away, but that is such a stark difference than if you were to build a business on a street corner, like, or whatever. It just seems so weird in this like digital age to be beholden to a platform where your literal entire business might rest. Seems wild, which again is, I'm not meaning to plug our own thing, but is one of the reasons why I started the Circle community, because, you know, platforms that really center around maybe your email, like a newsletter or a podcast where you follow an RSS feed, that's an open standard, which is why, like, I literally have an RSS pillow behind me because I love the open standard of RSS is like the one last bastion of, this is an open standard. If you publish and someone follows the RSS feed in their newsreader or their podcast app, like, they will get the thing that you made. It's just, it seems wild to me. It also feels a little weird, like, when the TikTok CEO is like appealing to the creators of the platform and like this, hey, we're in this thing together. It's like, yeah, I mean, you're going to walk away a millionaire no matter what. And these creators might lose their entire livelihood. Like, that feels weird. I also feel like, I don't have expertise or knowledge in the area, but the free speech argument always feels spurious to me. Like, it's, I don't think we are really understanding what that law and how that applies to a social network. And also, these laws that were all made over 200 years ago, there was no internet, there was no apps. So it's just, to me, just as someone like obviously reporting on this news, and maybe I'm bringing zero value to this, I don't know, but like, it's, I don't know how to think about it sometimes. I do feel like Neelay Patel talked about this on The Vergecast, that apparently one of the things that pushed, I think it was when it was in the House of Representatives, that there were a bunch of Congress people that went into a back room, saw some information about TikTok and what they do with data and the data they collect on its users, walked out of that room, and then immediately decided to pass this bill, basically, and then to where it is now, banning TikTok. And I feel like if there's anything that should happen or ought to happen, whatever was shown in that room, I feel like should be public knowledge to the people that are using TikTok, maybe to the people like as we are trying to decide like what, you know, what is best, what is good. You know, that seems like valuable information to not have as a TikTok user, as a creator. And so that feels weird to me, but I don't know. I don't know how else to think about
it. Yeah. And I do think an important piece of clarity for people, just I'm sure that, you know, I'm going to get trolled for this and that's fine. That's what I'm here for. But as a creator, and I don't mean you, Stephen, but as a person who posts things on social media, you don't have a First Amendment right to post things on TikTok, right?
Right.
Your First Amendment right means that the government can't punish you for whatever it is you say publicly. They can't throw you in jail for, you know, insulting the president. They can't throw you in jail for, you know, something you publish.
Yelling about the stay logged in checkbox.
Yeah, oh my gosh. You don't want to get me started right now. But anyway, there is no inherent right to exist for any particular social media platform, especially one that's owned by a company that's essentially part of like a foreign company. Like they don't, just not how the First Amendment works. Because if TikTok goes away, yes, that would hurt because all of these creators have built audiences, but you don't have like an inherent right to have that audience, and you could have built it somewhere else. And I have written many times. I remember, Stephen, do you remember? I don't know if you can remember this or not. You're not that young. You're not that much younger than me.
Young.
But I can remember having conversations. I used to like do consulting with photographers, and a lot of them would just post all the images they'd taken on Facebook, for example, right? And that's how they would build their audience. They'd build it all on Facebook. And I would say, like, you need to have your own website. You need to not build your entire business on someone else's platform, because if you do and they change the rules, now you have no business. This was not the case at the time, but looking back, all of that came true just for publishers, right? Publishers built their entire BuzzFeed, right? Built its entire business on traffic coming from Facebook to their website. And they even had a website. It's just their entire traffic generation strategy. And now, like, there are publications that just don't exist anymore because of that. You should never build your entire business on one platform. The last thing I'll say about this is I was super like curious when you started talking about your RSS pillow, because I thought, is this a thing that like reads you stories as you fall asleep? It just reads you RSS feeds. I'm like, an RSS pillow. I don't know. So
be amazing. So the last thing I'll say, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, Jack Conte, who is the co-founder of Patreon, he was at, I want to get this conference right because I messed it up last time. He was at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas this past year. And, you know, typically I see some of these keynotes, you know, because I find them interesting. I will put this one in the show notes. If you are a creator online or you're interested in this community, I highly recommend this talk, because he basically did a brief history of the internet and the different shifts. Early YouTube, he, you know, talks about MySpace and all that kind of stuff. And I think it is very telling. Again, Nilay Patel has been talking about this a lot, seeing the trajectory of what it meant to have an online community back then in the early days, what it has meant the last 10 years, and where it's going. And, you know, ironically, I think one of the first times I saw a video of him, it was with his band, Pomplemousse, on TikTok. I saw this band and I started following them because I loved the music. This was recently, like in the last year. And I did not realize that the guy I was seeing in that TikTok video was the co-founder of Patreon until I saw this keynote of him at South by Southwest. I was like, oh, shoot. I didn't even make that connection. Like, I just didn't know. I didn't know it was him. So, you know, because he's not saying I'm Jack Conte, co-founder of Patreon, in his TikTok videos. They're just playing music, him and his wife and their band or whatever. But anyway, this keynote, I think, is fascinating, talking about the future of the creator economy, where it's been, where it's going. So I would recommend this, and yeah, I'm curious where it's going to go. And I do think that one of the things he points to in that keynote, this is what I wanted to say, there's this idea, I forget who came up with it, but he points to it, is you really only need 1,000 true followers to have a successful online like creator community. Meaning, you might have millions of followers on TikTok, but underneath that is like who actually engages regularly You know, that's your community. And then underneath that is really like the true fans, quote unquote, a much smaller number. He made the comparison to like musicians. You have like the people who might stream your songs. You have the people who might go to a concert as the second level. Then you have the people who listen to every song on every album, have the t-shirt, love the band so much, like maybe they have a tattoo of the band, who knows? But there's those levels of engagement. And I think one of the things that algorithmic platforms like TikTok has revealed is like you can get that big number by going viral, doing the same shtick every day in a TikTok video, and you can have the 3 million followers. But one of the reasons why it's so hard to then move that audience to, say, an email newsletter or even a YouTube channel, which is still algorithmic, is because those millions of followers are not true community or actually engaged fans. Like those other, like that is the top level millions. And some of the, you know, the biggest ones, because of the sheer numbers, yeah, maybe they can move them to YouTube or whatever. But it's always been interesting to me when I'll see a TikToker with 5 million followers and I'll go to their YouTube channel and I'm like, they only have like 1,000 subscribers. Like, how does that work? And it's because like TikTok made everyone feel great with thousands of followers. I talked about that own experience I had of getting like 10,000 followers overnight because I talked about a shortcut. But it doesn't mean that you have now engaged fans that will actually pay money for something that you make. And actually for that, you really just need 1,000 really dedicated people. And like if we had 1,000 people supporting this show every month, like that would be a huge difference. Yeah. Like for most people. For most creators. So, you know, I don't particularly want TikTok to go away. I do want to know what they show those congressmen in that back room, but I don't want it to go away. But I also feel like creators in this world, like think about like what Jason said, having your own space on the internet. Like there are still open platforms on the internet, like having a website, having an RSS feed, which is a podcast or a blog. Think about those things as you look to the future of your business.
Yeah, and I know we're going to move on, but I just sent you the link. It's a Kevin Kelly blog post from 2008, 1,000 True Fans. And essentially the idea was like, the thing about the internet is anyone can find 1,000 true fans for whatever it is that their idea is. Don't worry about having millions of followers. What you'd rather have is 1,000 people, like Steven says, who will give you $5 a month or who will do whatever it is. And that's the promise of the scale of the internet is that
right.
Really, and actually, Ben Thompson, who I've referenced several times, he does Stratechery. He also does a podcast called Sharp Tech with Andrew Sharp. I think I did that right. But anyway, it was on his 10-year anniversary of launching the paid version of Stratechery. And he says, like, my whole thing was if I could get 1,000 people who would pay me $10 a month, like, that's a good living. I'd be set. Yeah, exactly. I'd be fine with that. And instead of looking for millions of followers, what you should be looking for is 1,000 true fans. And maybe the number's 1,200 or 5,000 or whatever it might be. And Casey Newton, who was previously at The Verge when he started Platformer, he said the same thing. He's like, if I could get... I just need this core group of people who are willing to support what I'm doing. I don't need millions and millions and millions. And so, yeah, there you go. That's the aside we just did there. This is like philosophical.
We got very philosophical. I should ask the AI pin what it thinks. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going
to. Don't, because we don't have enough time.
We don't have enough time. All right. This is going to be our quasi lightning round so we can get to the personal tech segment. This segment of the show is I'm going to lean on Jason here because I'm going to ask, how are companies doing?
Yeah, this is the, I just put in the our notes. It's definitely earnings time and just dropped like 10 links in there. So it is true. Like Tesla, Meta, Netflix, Spotify all announced earnings this week. Google announces them today. So we have no idea. So do you want me to just do them one at a time? We'll start with Netflix. The reason I put this in here is that Netflix, which had a record quarter, the big news though was that they're going to not report their subscriber number anymore. And the reason I put this Variety article in there is because essentially like they're linking it to the fact that Apple stopped disclosing the number of sales of iPhones. And like, that seems to be fine.
I didn't realize that. I thought in Apple earnings calls, they still say like, we've sold 70 million iPhones.
No, they just disclose, they break things down by iPhone, iPad, Mac, services, you know, and wearables. They do not tell you the number of actual units sold. They just tell you the total number of revenue by business.
But don't those numbers come out like around the earnings call?
Well, you can sort of reverse engineer it, right? If you know the total dollar amount sold, you can sort of figure out, well, what's the average price sold of an iPhone? You don't know that for sure, but some of these people like Ming-Chi Kuo, who might know based on different inventory levels and that kind of stuff, people can guess what that is, but Apple does not publish anymore. Here's how many iPads we sold. Here's how many Vision Pros we sold, that kind of thing. And so anyway, Netflix is not going to. The reason is it will not be an impressive number anymore because basically everyone is subscribed to Netflix. So if everyone plus one subscribes, it's like, that's just not that, there's not enough people to move that needle anymore, especially once they introduce the ad supported tier and they've really captured all of that. So they want to talk about other things like, here's our average revenue per user, or here's how much we're making selling advertising, or here's that kind of thing. They just don't want the conversation to be about the number of the increase in subscriber numbers, because they just, that's not sustainable for them. And if their growth is based on that, that's just going to look bad. So anyway, that's the Netflix one.
And it makes sense, I guess. Like once you reach that, I think there's a term for it, but there's like that threshold of like, or the total addressable market.
Yeah.
Like if you've saturated the total addressable market of people who are going to subscribe to Netflix, like, yeah, you can't, I mean, not going to change. So you got to add services. I have seen more games pushed from Netflix recently. Like when I open Netflix on a mobile device, it's like, hey, look at these games. So I was like, all right, Netflix.
You know what's amazing about that though? You can download one of Netflix's games, and it's the only way you can actually sign up for Netflix on your iPhone. If you download a game, you can sign up for Netflix, and then if you open the Netflix app, you can actually watch Netflix. It's like, but it is the base ad supported. You can't do the 4K. Right, you can't do any of that kind of stuff. And you can't upgrade to that because you log into the Netflix website. It's like, I don't know who you are. I mean, you have a subscription through Apple, but here, watch something.
Right.
But it's curious to me that Netflix actually had a pretty good quarter report. I think they reported like 9 million new subscribers or something like that. And then they're like, but we're not going to talk about that anymore. And the stock went down.
Yeah, the stock took a hit. And so I think that's another story, is stocks taking a hit, which is Tesla.
Oh, yeah.
They've been hurting recently. You had the article here on Inc.
Yeah, I mean, so Tesla also is in an interesting situation. In my personal perspective on this, well, like they had a bad quarter. There's just no way around it, right? They've struggled to deliver vehicles. They have struggled. And I'm just going to disclose, I drive a Model S. If you want to send the Tesla hate, I drive one. I think I can say what I want and no one can accuse me of being a hater, okay? Do I wish they had a different CEO? I'm not going to answer that, but you know, it's a question. It's a question I have. Anyway, their revenue and their profit went down, but their stock went up. And the reason it went up is because Elon Musk is promising that they're going to do essentially an affordable 25-ish thousand model in, called the Model 2. They've been talking about this for a while. My thing is, the numbers were bad, but Elon Musk made a promise and the stock went up. And some point, it does sort of surprise me because the number of promises that this company has made, well, that this company's CEO has made about, like, there was a time I remember in maybe 2020-ish, 2021, where he promised that Tesla owners were going to be able to like rent out their vehicles as robotaxis at night and make money off of them. Like that didn't happen. Every time they talk about full self-driving, it's just like one software point update away from full self-driving. And that hasn't happened. And it's like, and so when he's, you know, they had to recall all of the Cybertrucks that had been delivered so far to apparently put a screw into the accelerator pedal, because it does seem like a 12,000 pound steel triangle driving down the street with a stuck accelerator pedal is bad. Like we can all agree. Not good. That's not even a controversial take. It's just bad.
It's just bad.
So Tesla had a bad quarter, but apparently things are looking up.
That's bizarre. Listen, I don't wish one way or the other on the company, but if it lowers the price of used Tesla Model 3s so I can get one, I'll get
one. Listen, Tesla makes I drive one. It's a very good car. I love it. It's my favorite car I've ever driven. The Model 3, fantastic. The Model Y is the best-selling car that's not a Ford F-150 in America. Like, it is. It's the best-selling vehicle there is. The Model 3 and the Model Y combined to be, like, two of the five best-selling cars in America. Like, they make good cars. They do have some, like, quality control issues, whatever. But the Model 3, I'd recommend one to just about anybody. But that's completely separate from the fact that sometimes it seems like the companies run like a clown show. Like...
It came out there right at the end. It came out there right at the end. I don't know if you caught it, listeners. We'll just move on to the next one. Meta also had earnings, but one piece of information I thought was interesting, the Verge headline I think is great. Meta wants to be the Microsoft of headsets. namely that it wants to license the Horizon OS, which is Meta's headset. So whatever the Meta Quest, the OS that it runs on, which is Horizon OS, they want to license it to hardware makers like Lenovo, Asus, and others, basically like Microsoft licenses Windows to makers like HP and also the same people, Lenovo, Asus, or whatever. So that's interesting. And then the earnings, though,
yeah,
I think they had good earnings, but then they said that the forecast for the second quarter, it was a light forecast, and then the stock dropped.
Well, yeah, okay, so this, I am realizing that essentially what we've proven on this episode is that the stock price of a company is entirely speculative, right? It's not based necessarily on, well, and this is true. If you ask an investor, the stock price is not based on your current performance. It's based on your anticipated future performance. Because why would you buy a stock today unless you expected it to do better in the future? Like that does seem intuitive. Here, but Meta had like doubled its profit compared to the year over and lost $200 billion of its value because of a plunge in the stock price. And I think what happened was they talked on the call about how much money they made. And then Mark Zuckerberg got on the call and said, and we plan on blowing it all on AI. Like we made all this money and we're just going to spend it all on doing these things. And I think, you know, and he made the comment, you know, historically at this point in our product cycle, we tend to, you know, things look really bad because we spend all of this money. And look here, like you and I became acquainted with each other because of my takes on Facebook, really. Like one of my takes on Facebook. Right. So I am pretty clearly on record as being like Meta, net positive or negative for the universe, uncertain, right? Like but there is no question in my mind that Mark Zuckerberg knows what he's doing. Like I'm going to just give him that. He knows what he's doing. I don't always agree with what he's doing. I don't always think that, you know, he's the best spokesperson for what he's trying to do. But I do like they have proven time and time again that like the fact that they went through Apple's AT&T, the app tracking and transparency, which could have decimated their business, and they actually came out stronger, right? They figured their way out. They figured their way out of it. They worked their way through it. Yeah. I think it's pretty clear, like Facebook, Meta, they're not going anywhere. They are going to figure this out. And one of the ways they're going to do it is what you just talked about, which is they're calling their operating system for virtual headsets Horizon OS, and they're going to just license it to and I, you know, the Verge headline says they want to be the Microsoft headsets. I don't know if it's the Microsoft or the Android, but one of the point is they want to be the opposite of Apple, right? And Zuckerberg talks about that. In the mobile space, the closed model of Apple won, which I don't know if that's true because there are a lot more Android phones in the world than there are iPhones, but you know, they want to, the way they're going to hedge against Apple getting any ground in virtual reality, augmented reality, whatever it might be, is they're going to just put their stuff everywhere. It's like, you can all just use ours. Everything you're doing is bad. We are the only ones who figured it out. You can just use our stuff. That's what they're doing.
You know, the bonus topic just came to me. We got to talk about headsets and the future of headsets in the bonus episode, because you've had the Apple Vision Pro now for
a couple weeks,
over a week. And so we're going to talk about that. But I'm speculative about the future of headsets and other gadgets like the one I'm wearing and how that, anyway, so we'll talk about that in the bonus episode, but I'll save it. Last thing before I talk about this Humane AI pin, what is it? Spotify?
Yeah. So,
they had a record quarter.
Spotify had a really good quarter, mostly because it laid off a bunch of people. And so it kept more of the money that it made. Like it's true. And in fact, the CEO was like, that was rough. We might've laid off too many people too quickly because it's taken us a few months to sort it out. But they are the one example of a company that made a bunch of money and then their stock price went up. So like, you know, they must continue to must think that they're going to continue to do that. They had, you know, they had strong earnings, they had strong profit. Again, the profitability was because they cut the expenses of employing, what was it, like 1,500 people. So they saved all that money. But I think that, you know, Spotify is a really interesting company. It's sort of like the darling of the EU. You know, a lot of, when you look across the pond at a lot of the things that are happening with the DMA and that sort of thing, a lot of it, like the only company really that benefits is Spotify because they are the European company over there. But I think people underestimate the scale that Spotify has. Like there was a chart that I saw as a part of their earnings where it was like and it's actually in the Yahoo Finance article that we linked, where it's like the ad supported users and the premium subscribers, they have 240 paid subscribers, Spotify does, and 615 total active subscribers, 240 million. I think I said 240 period. Like they're so big.
I was like, they would not be doing
everyone in my neighborhood is subscribed to Spotify and that's it. No, 240 million, that's like Netflix size, but they have an additional, I'm not going to do the math, but a total of 615 million active subscribers. Because you may like, right. we forget that like Spotify has this entire ad supported tier that you can use. And so anyway, I thought it was interesting. It was at least one example of a company that had good returns and the stock price actually went up. But also they laid off a bunch of people, so that's bad.
That's sad, yeah. Do you think that Apple would ever do an ad-supported Apple Music tier?
That's an interesting question. I think that if they thought it would make people upgrade to Apple One, then yes.
Because you have Apple Music and Apple TV, both ripe for ads. Not that I want ads there, but I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
they could put ads in there.
The weird thing that happens to, like, this is what happened with Netflix, and this is the reason that Disney Plus and everybody else is adding ads, is because when Netflix added an ad-supported tier at a lower price, it actually made more money off of those subscribers than the ones who are paying for the higher tier, because they make more money showing ads to people, even if they're paying a less amount. And so so now, if you notice, that's why Netflix started raising prices on the premium tiers and taking features out, because they really just want you to be like, no, I won't pay $73 a month for Netflix. I'll just go to the ad tier because they make so much more money. So in that sense, I actually hope that Apple doesn't. However, my theory has long been, I mean, if you look like Apple News, the ads are so bad. They're the worst ads on the internet. Like absolute worst ads on the internet. Now, and the ads in the App Store, for example, like you can search for something and you just get random ads for all these other apps that are not related to it and stuff. So I really hope that Apple doesn't, but maybe they'll just put terrible ads in there to get more people to subscribe. I don't know.
I saw a recent article. It was yesterday. Someone interviewed the former head of Google Search, and it was another article about like why Google Search has degraded over the last decade, basically. And it was the same thing. We talked about it 2 or 3 episodes ago. But basically, the head of Google Search used to the priority used to be like search results, and then whoever was over ads at Google was put in charge of search, and it basically went from like search results as the priority to profit.
Yep.
And that's basically like it's might not be a 1-to-1 correlation, but really looks like that might be the thing. I think actually John Gruber at Daring Fireball talked about it. Here we go. He linked to this Edward Zitron article, which I've not read the full article. I've read Gruber's take, but I'll put a link to this article in the show notes. The Man Who Killed Google Search is the name of the article. And he talks about kind of the history of that transition. And I find it it's interesting. I think it's another piece of information about like what happens when ads and profit are put above quality of results. But anyway, last thing before I talk about the Humane AI Pin, this video was shared. I think this was also another Gruber link, but this is a 32-minute video about how LLMs, large language models, work. AIs like ChatGPT and Perplexity and Gemini and all that. I've not watched the whole thing. I just started it. So technical, so heady. I understand almost nothing. But if you're really interested to know like the technology behind LLMs and why they seem smart sometimes, yeah, you should watch this video. It's wild.
Is that the one? Was it the one Syracuse was talking about on ATP about like different pieces? He was definitely talking about a series of videos about how the large language models work and how it's basically just math. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, yes, that is, I think this was John Syracuse now that you mentioned it. But yeah, anyway, so technical. I don't know. I probably won't finish it, but if you're really curious, I'll put that link in the show notes as well.
I have to mow the lawn today, so I probably won't watch this.
No, it's okay. You just listen to a podcast. You can listen to this podcast while you mow the lawn.
Okay.
All right, yesterday, Jason, I got the Humane AI pin. Finally got it. I did an unboxing video, which was largely unsuccessful, I feel like. It wasn't a great video.
Meaning like you weren't able to unbox it, or?
It didn't feel like I had good energy. Like it didn't feel great. I don't know what it was. Oh. When I unboxed the Apple Vision Pro video, I did that on a live stream. That felt great. And then I also did like the setup process, which was kind of fun. I couldn't really do that with this because the setup process was, I didn't even know what was happening. It was really weird. But I mean,
how good could an unboxing video of the worst product Marquez has ever reviewed actually be? That's my question.
Listen, the hardware is nice. Okay. Nice hardware. I got the white one here. I've had this for 18 hours. And I've only used it for probably
And recharged it 11 times in 18 hours.
The charging is also obtuse. I don't know how it works. Listen, from my first few hours experience, everything every reviewer said totally accurate. It gets warm. Battery life is trash. Like, it does error out sometimes. But here's the thing. I started asking it things like, I stopped thinking or didn't think about it as like a phone on my chest. I started just thinking about it as like a ChatGPT that's just waiting for me to ask it something, right? I mean, because that's basically what it is. ChatGPT in a pin on the thing. And so I did start asking it like random things. You could do easy stuff like how far away is the sun from Earth in miles or whatever. I didn't say in miles the first time, and it gave me every measurement known to man. Like, here it is in kilometers, here it is in light years. I was like, I don't need all that. But I started asking it some questions that I thought was pretty good. One of the ones that surprised me was like movie stuff. I didn't know it would do that. So you can ask it things like this. Is it, like, see, I can, I might have died. Hold on one second. What's a movie that stars both Michael Fassbender and Kevin Bacon?
Unable to connect to music services.
Wow. And I asked it the same question like four times yesterday, and it got it every time.
Both Michael Fassbender and Kevin Bacon is at X-Men First Class.
Okay, so there you go. So it did. I don't know why it gave me the error first, but like, I didn't know it could do that. I didn't know it could do like movie reference. Who are these actors in? And then you could do things like summarize the book, The Art of War, in one sentence.
Finding book summary.
Probably should have
talked. The Art of War by Sun Tzu provides strategies and tactics for competition and conflict, aiming for invincibility, victory without battle, and unassailable strength through understanding the physics, politics, and psychology of conflict.
Like, okay.
That's a long sentence. Also, did it have to read the whole book first? Because that took a little while.
I think it probably pulled it from the internet. Okay, two more examples here. Okay, simple things like, who composed the music for the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Finding composer. The music for the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas was composed by Danny Elfman.
Right, okay. Now, I know, I could pull up call sheet or whatever, but like, okay, it's doing all right. I don't get failures as much as like I feel like other reviewers now. All right, I'm going to do one more. I thought this was interesting. Can you take a pineapple you get from the grocery store, plant it in the ground, and grow a new pineapple tree?
Checking pineapple planting.
Is that like a website?
Yes. You can grow a new pineapple tree from a pineapple purchased at the grocery store by using the top of the pineapple to propagate a new plant. It takes approximately 18 to 24 months to grow a new pineapple from the top of a store-bought pineapple.
I mean, that's still less time than it took that thing to answer your question, so that's not bad.
Listen, we can hate on how long it takes. All right, what was the other one I was going to do? Anyway, I was at a bunch of questions, so I was thinking, like, ask a ChatGPT style question, and it was doing pretty good. You know, the laser ink thing, I hate using it, that's trash. Like, there's a lot of things not great about it, but there are some times I ask it, like, for synonyms for words, maybe if you're trying to write something or whatever. Yes, you could use ChatGPT on your computer or whatever. But sometimes if you're just walking around, I do think there's something to be say is like, it's, you know, one tap away, even less friction than like pulling the phone out of your pocket, unlocking it, because I don't have Siri enabled when it's locked, holding the side button or whatever. So anyway, I find like there might be some value there. Okay. Like, I'm just overall, but on the flip side, all these like complicated questions that I was trying to throw at it and it was giving me answers, I was going to go to Siri to like show how bad Siri is. And I was surprised at how much Siri could do now. Like, I don't know when it changed. I don't know if this is all like back end stuff. But, like, I didn't know Siri could do the movie thing. Like, you could ask Siri, what's a movie that stars both Michael Fassbender and Kevin Bacon? So this time it said found it on the web, but it shows me X-Men First Class, like in the search results. So things like, how much caffeine is the maximum amount for an adult in a day? So that's what the Humane app did. But like general knowledge stuff like that, I thought Siri was going to send me to the web for everything. And it tells you the source. Like, it says like healthline.com. You know, that's where it got that information. But I was actually surprised how much Siri could actually just tell you as an answer that also like matched what the AI pin could do. And I just haven't used Siri in forever because I just assumed it was bad and it couldn't do those things. So I was just surprised, like, oh shoot, Siri's actually closer than I thought.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, was there anything that thing could do that you don't already have something that would do that you don't have to wear on your chest?
I mean, no, like, I have to try identifying stuff more. Like, I want to walk outside and ask it to identify a tree. You know, I think that would be interesting. Or like, let me try this. Look at this and tell me what color it is. I'm holding up an orange cloth.
Sorry, unable.
Never mind. Anyway.
That was impressive.
Quinn Nelson. He was doing a live stream on X yesterday, and he was doing like, sometimes you can ask it to look at stuff and it would recognize and describe it, and it was fairly accurate. So I don't know. I got to do some more testing. Basically, my takeaway is, I guess Siri's not as bad as I thought, and maybe my bullishness on this is misguided.
Mm-hmm.
that's the conclusion I came to.
I think that's a safe conclusion.
Anyway, I'm getting a Rabbit R1 too. It arrives today. I was hoping it was supposed to arrive yesterday. It got delayed. I was hoping to have both here on the podcast so I could wear my Apple Vision Pro, hold the Rabbit R1, wear the pin, but it didn't work out. So I'll have both next week, and I'll do more. So you just have zero desire to try this. Do you not get excited by just like gadgets? It's just like gadgets.
The Rabbit R1 is interesting to me, but I'm convinced that the best place for all of this is the Apple Watch or a watch. It doesn't have to be the Apple. Because this is my honest take on this, and this is somewhat true of the Vision Pro. I like Neelai Patel's face multiplier, like index of anything you are going to have as a new gadget has to, the usefulness and functionality of it has to surpass the ridiculousness of having to wear it on your face, essentially.
Yes.
But the Humane AI pin is pretty close. I mean, yeah. There's only really one group of people I've ever seen wear things in that location. And that's like people with like a brooch or a pin or you know, Secret Star Service Trek. Agents. I mean, yeah, or Star Trek. But I mean, I don't think that the functionality of it surpasses what you can already do on a phone or on your Apple Watch or another to make it worth wearing a thing like that in public. Like, I just don't know. The R1 is more interesting because it can actually take action. And, you know, order me a pizza, book me an Uber, do a thing. Like, and that to me is like super interesting. And that's kind of the Ferret UI thing that we talked about a week or two ago that Apple has been working on. And if I could just do that and say, hey, iPhone, you know, order me a pizza and an Uber or something like that. And it would just do all those things to the apps. I don't know. That'd be weird to order a pizza and then get an Uber and go somewhere.
I don't know. Uber driver arrives with pizza in hand.
That 100% you can do that. I guarantee you. I don't know I'd have to do that on my own, but you can 100% do that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I've done that in New York City where like, it's like you get in an Uber from the airport and on the way to the hotel, you're like put in a stop somewhere to pick something up and then you just keep going. Yeah. So anyway, but I think it's interesting. I just am sort of on the, like, I don't have time for a device that doesn't add functionality to my life. And I'm fine with a device where you aren't sure what that functionality is going to be if it has that potential. And we can talk about this in the bonus content because I have lots of those thoughts with the Vision Pro, tons of those thoughts, but I just don't think that, I mean, it's just not there. And it's not there, but it's there. It's on your chest. It's like, it's not there technically speaking, but you have to wear it. I just don't know that I see that. So I don't need a little Tamagotchi that I have to carry around and wear on my chest. So
I think it's Tamagotchi,
whatever. I don't need either of them, Tamagotchi or his brother Tamagotchi. Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a longer segment when I have the Rabbit R1 in hand, which I get today. And then maybe compare the two. But I will say, like, friction, when it comes to either Apple Vision Pro, putting it on my face, or this, like, this is way easier just to put on. But the friction is things like battery life and reliability. Like, I will say, every time I put on my Apple Vision Pro and it starts up, like, it works. Like, it's going to do what I want it to do. Like, I don't have to wonder, is it going to play Dune or not? You know, this thing, the friction is the unknown of will it follow through on the promise. And also the battery thing is annoying. Like it comes with this like charging, this little egg thing, and it comes with like another booster. And so it's like, I don't even understand, like, does this have a battery in it? I think so. And I guess this charges the other battery, and you can charge a battery in the egg case, but you can't charge the pin by itself in the egg case. The pin has to be attached to a battery for it to, like, it's very confusing. And that's like, that's the friction of, like, if this was just, I put it on in the morning and maybe use it throughout the day, don't think about it, just use it when I want, and then charge it at night, that lowering the level of friction might help a little bit. And if it was also like very reliable, maybe. And if it was connected to my phone, you know, there is something to say of, like, it is not even a second to just like hold my finger on this and ask it something, where if my phone is in another room or if I'm walking around or in the car, like, it actually has been kind of fun to ask it like just general stuff in the car, because my CarPlay and car microphone is not great. And so, like, this has been kind of fun in that, but anyway.
But you know what's the same size, has way better battery life, and I can just go, hey Siri, does Steven look ridiculous with that pin on? Ooh, could you try again? She doesn't want to answer that. She feels bad for you.
See, exactly.
But she heard and she gave me a non-answer very quickly. But my point is, like, I don't understand. Like, my Apple Watch Ultra is got to be the same size. And the battery life will last 3 days. And it has a screen. What is this thing doing that it can't last more than 17 and a half minutes? Seriously, I don't understand that.
I know. I know the laser projector kills the battery. Because during setup, I had to like do, get it connected to Wi-Fi, which was a process. Like, Jason's putting his Apple Watch Ultra on his lapel.
We're twins.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, listen, I got mine too. And honestly, I tried a lot of those questions on the watch, and it was actually working too. So like, what movie stars both Michael Fassbender, What movie stars both Michael Fassbender and Kevin Bacon? Bacon and Sedgwick have starred together in Pirates, Murder in the First, The Woodsman.
That's wife.
It did not hear me correctly. Again, not perfect, but like very fast. That is one thing. Like the speed at which Siri answers, like I can't knock it anymore. Like a lot of the general questions I've asked it has actually been very fast, especially on the iPhone. And I think that's going to be the video I make about this thing is like, I thought this was going to win. Like it'll win Jeopardy, basically.
Yeah.
Like, general knowledge summary. But actually, whatever Apple's been doing in the background, like Siri has come along.
I've learned that most of the delay on my watch is simply it waiting to make sure I'm done. But once it realizes I'm done talking, you know, it'll wait for a second to make sure you've actually stopped. And once it's done, it's like either it has an answer or it doesn't. But it's like that. Right. So.
Well, and that's if you really want to know the speed of Siri, rest and hold the side button on your phone while you're saying the request and let go when you're done talking, because then the phone knows exactly when to stop listening. And I have found the answers to be surprisingly fast, even for like general knowledge things. It's been weird. So anyway, I think it's going to be the video I make about it. But
awesome.
I'll talk more about it next week. The Humane AI pin. There it is. Anyway, let us know what you thought. Join our community, social.primarytech.fm. The link's also in the show notes. Support the show if you can. But if not, subscribe to the YouTube channel. We appreciate that. Listen, share the show. 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts. But we'd love to know about what you think of the episode. Start a conversation in our social circle at social.primarytech.fm. Again, if it hits 100 members like this weekend, I'll upgrade it so we can have unlimited members because we want all of you a part of that as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We're going to go to a bonus episode, talk about headsets, and that'll be fun too. If you want to listen to that bonus episode, support the show. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.